and good morning to you. I'm Ellen Speer, and you're listening to Morning Drive on Pittsfield Community Radio. Thanks for deciding to spend your morning with us. My wonderful guest this morning is Jim McGrath. He is the Park, Open Space, and Natural Resources Program Manager for the City of Pittsfield. And we're all starting to think about what it's like to be outside, maybe even a little bit, huh, Jim?
Yeah, this is the season.
Yeah, and everything is open, all the Pittsfield facilities at this point, or what's open, what's closed?
We are open and ready to go. We're welcoming visitors every day. Residents and visitors and tourists, our parks are open, accessible, and always free of charge. So that's an important point about what we offer.
Now, your portfolio is pretty broad.
It is.
You've got all the playgrounds and parks.
All of the playgrounds and parks, and there's about 32 park and playground areas across the city.
That's a lot.
We have a handful of conservation areas across the city, like Brattlebrook Park and Wild Acres. And our department also manages all the school grounds as well. So, yes, our domain is vast, but this is important stuff for our city. This is where we recreate and come together as community.
Sure. And so, dog parks, skate parks, bike trails, lakes, all you.
All me.
That's great. Well, let's talk first about some unfortunate weather. I mean, it's been kind of not the best. Does that have an impact on the facilities and long-term, short-term?
Yeah, certainly. Not so much impact on the facilities. Of course, our facilities can sort of weather the weather, if you will,
yeah.
But it certainly impacts a lot of the programming that's happening. You know, we've seen a fair amount of rainouts for, you know, particularly these late May, early June events that are sort of annual events that are important
sure.
in our community. You know, it seems like it's rained every Saturday for the past 12 weeks. And we particularly have seen the impact to the athletics and particularly baseball. There have been so many rainouts. We've had to reschedule games and try to get the fields ready in between raindrops. So that's been a particular challenge.
Yeah. And speaking of getting things ready, you always have a list as long as your arm, I imagine, of projects that are in the works. Can you tell us what your priority projects are for Pittsfield for this season?
Yeah, so we're guided by a long range plan in the Parks Department, which enunciates sort of where we want to go relative to park improvements and new park areas. Right now, we are working really diligently to finish the Pontusic Lake Park master plan phase one. So that'll wrap up in mid-July. And of course, that was nearly $1 million project to create more accessibility into the park. And there's a really wonderful new boardwalk and promenade walkway along the lake.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah.
From the time you get into a place to park, what are we going to see that's new and different now?
Yeah, so this was something we started during COVID. We started a master planning project. Pontusic Lake Park is one of our most beloved parks in the city. It's got the best views, I think, out to Mount Greylock over the lake. We heard that there was a strong desire to create better accessibility and access to the water. So, when you pull into the park, there'll be new handicap accessible parking in the boat ramp parking area. You'll be able to transition from the spaces there onto a new 10-foot wide paved promenade walkway, which will follow the shoreline. There'll be new picnic tables and benches along the walkway and throughout the park as well. And then what's the most exciting part of the project is that the former city beach that was in that location at the bottom of that really tall stair
yeah.
set off of Hancock Road, at the bottom there, we've created a new boardwalk over the wetland.
Oh,
and
cool.
It's going to be a really handsome addition. I think folks will be really impressed when they see that. And again, this has been something that was conceived by the community, and we're building it for the community.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, for that's your responsibility. For our responsibility, how do we keep it gorgeous once it opens? what should we be thinking about when we come to city resources like this?
Yeah, so, we're always hoping that our visitors first off, respecting the space. And these are all shared spaces. And there's a certain you know, there are certain behaviors that are expected, you know, be nice, treat the facility well, pick up your garbage if you have a dog with you, make sure your dog's on a leash, pick up after your dog, and simply respect the signage that's throughout. You know, if there's a handicapped parking space, please don't park there unless you're a qualified, you know, for that. You know, we simply want folks to enjoy our spaces and understand that these are shared spaces and that there are others there to enjoy the space and the peace and quiet and whatever that park area might have to offer.
And there's such beautiful walks all around. Yeah. It's not the only body of water. Anota, dear to my heart, is also another one. Let's talk for a second about the natural resource part of that. For people who may not know, you may have heard of zebra mussels before, and that's something that all of us can really help prevent to help keep the lakes healthy. What do we need to do, and what are they all about?
Yeah, so Anota Lake is, of course, the crown jewel water body here in Pittsfield. It's entirely in the city. It's 640 acres in size. We spend a lot of time on management of that resource. We're particularly interested right now in making certain that the threat of zebra mussels doesn't become a real issue at Anota Lake. We are spending a lot of time with prevention measures. For a number of years, we've had boat ramp monitors at the lake trying to help boaters understand their boating history and if their boat is safe to launch. There's a fair amount of education we're trying to do to make certain folks are really aware of what the real impacts of zebra mussels could be. We're doing a fair amount of water quality testing, looking for the presence of zebra mussels a couple times a year. And unfortunately, we've found recently some hits that zebra mussels are present in the lake. So we're continuing to monitor and react to that situation. Because if zebra mussels get into Anota Lake, everything changes. It's a completely new ball game. You know, the lake ecology will be much different than it is now.
What happens?
We only need to look down at Laurel Lake. Laurel Lake is completely infested with zebra mussels. The fishery has been impacted. The makeup of the vegetation in the water body has been impacted. Water clarity is impacted. You know, and folks say, oh, zebra mussels make the water very clear. That's not what we want in a water body in the Northeast. The water clarity should look like tea water. It should not be clear. You shouldn't be able to see 20 feet to the bottom. And that's not something we want to see in our water body.
So what are the things anyway? They're like a real type of mussel, and why are they
zebra mussels
not welcome here?
Yeah, they're an invasive species, so they're not native to our area. They came into the United States via the shipping channels through the Great Lakes, and they've spread very quickly into the western part of this country as well as eastward. Zebra mussels are knocking at the door of the Berkshires. They're entirely in the Hudson River. They're at a number of water bodies in eastern New York, up in Vermont, Lake Champlain. The zebra mussels, you know, and a lot of folks that boat in our region boat in these proximate water bodies. So we're very concerned about them. You know, they have no natural predator. So once they get set up in a water body, you can't get rid of them unless you take really drastic measures like drain the lake and dry everything out. And that's not anything that we would ever conceivably get a permit for. So
Now, can you like see them if you pull your boat out of the water and look at the bottom? Do you see, are they little crusty things on the bottom of your boat?
They do.
What?
They're bivalves and like other mollusks or barnacles, so to speak. They will attach to a boat. They'll attach to a hard surface. So if you launch your boat in Anota Lake, say, or even let's talk about Laurel Lake. If you launch your boat at Laurel Lake and then you pull it out 2 hours later, you're not going to have a mussel attached to the hull of the boat. What you will have, though, is water that is maybe it's on a buoy line that's connected to your boat, or your bilge water, or the water that's pulled up into your motor. That water contains millions of small, what are called veligers. And these are baby zebra mussels. You can't see them. So we always say, relative to the zebra mussel situation, it's what you can't see that could really hurt you. And all it takes is someone from Laurel Lake to pull out of Laurel Lake, to come to Anota Lake, start their engine. All of a sudden, the motor flushes into the water body. And all of a sudden, we've cross-contaminated Anota Lake with zebra mussels. So That's what our monitors at the lakes are trying to do, is ask everyone, where's your boat been? And what have you done with this boat since that visit to a particular lake? So
what can a responsible boat owner do if they, even if it's not Pontusic or Laurel, but somewhere else, and they want to come back to a lake in Pittsfield? What do you do first?
So the simple answer is to not boat in water bodies that are infected with zebra mussels. So to have an awareness of where you're boating and what the environmental conditions are. If you're not boating in infected water bodies, and you can certainly safely boat in our Pittsfield water bodies. If you have been in an infected water body, you need to make certain your boat is decontaminated. And there's a number of ways to do that. You can let the boat just simply dry out over the course of a week or two, drain everything and let it dry. If there are zebra mussels harbored in any of those spaces on the boat, they'll desiccate and they won't be an issue. Or you could physically decontaminate your boat using a bleach and water solution. And that's all contained on our website. And there's information at the boat ramp on how to do that. So we just need folks to be mindful and most importantly, take this seriously and practice clean boating.
Yeah. So what does that do? Should people who swim in that water be concerned about it at all?
There's really no concern with swimming. But again, if you're in a water body, if you're swimming at Laurel Lake and you've got water shoes or floaties and things, before you bring them to Anoda Lake, similarly, you'll want to make certain they're decontaminated.
Yeah. Now, not everybody's got a boat, but a lot of people want to get on the water. Do you have any tips for what people can do if they want to try out things, or is that all from commercial vendors to get out there?
The city doesn't offer any rentals or any opportunities like that, but there are other organizations that are the Berkshire Rowing, which you're associated with. There's a Learn to Row program that's run at the lake, and I think that's been pretty popular, introducing folks to rowing shells and the sport of rowing. There are some, I know at Anoda Lake, there is the Anoda Boat Livery. They provide rentals of canoes and kayaks and stand-up paddle boards. So they become sort of the full-service rental spot on the lake.
Yeah.
I always say, and to my kids as well, find a friend who lives on the lake
and has
some kayaks,
right?
Or a boat.
Friend with a boat is always a good thing.
But living in the Berkshires, there is no better an enjoyable respite to be on the water, messing around in a boat. It really is the perfect relaxation.
Yeah. What are some other projects that you're working on that you'll have ready for us?
A lot of what I do also is work on large environmental restoration projects. So right now we're currently working with the Commonwealth on the removal of the Bel Air Dam on Wacona Street. So the Bel Air Dam was a dam that was built in the 1800s. It was part of a mill complex along Wacona Street. This mill provided woolen products for many, many years. And the dam, of course, was critical to the hydropower that powered the mill operations. The dam's no longer needed. It's decrepit. It's falling apart. There's a fair amount of contaminated sediment behind the dam. So the city, working with the state, was able to access $20 million in American Rescue Plan funding. So there is a major project that is just kicking off on Wacona Street to remove that dam. So this is a really important restoration project. That dam has been identified by the city for a number of years as a problem, in that if it were to go or fall apart during a storm, there could be some real impacts to homes and businesses downstream. So we're getting rid of that dam, and we're completely restoring that water, that channel, that part of the Housatonic River in that location. Really critical, important environmental restoration and community restoration project as well.
Now, throughout Pittsfield and really throughout the Berkshires, there were a lot of dams in that situation.
Yeah.
Those built to power mills that no longer exist?
Typically that's the legacy of these old dams. You know, they many of them are still standing, and they are sort of precarious because often folks haven't invested in them, and you know, many of them are privately owned. But you know, to be a private dam owner in the Commonwealth right now is
Not fun, huh?
Wouldn't want to be in that position.
Sure.
You know, we are currently working on another dam removal along Churchill Street. There is a dam that's privately owned, and it's one that I'm sorry, it might be Lebanon Avenue. Regardless,
it's
privately owned, and we applied for a grant, and the Commonwealth is assisting us to do some evaluation on the dam for the dam owner, just to understand what his options are and what those costs might be, because he can't do this alone.
Yeah, it is.
Dam removal is a big part of what I do.
A public thing. Let's talk about bicycling and bike trails. What are the major bike trails in Pittsfield?
Yeah.
And are you part of the stuff right through the heart of the city as well as the stuff that's further out?
Absolutely. So for the past 25 years, I've been involved with bike path planning in the city. And, and then just in general, you know, infrastructure improvements related to bike friendliness here in our community. So what's most visible around bike paths here in Pittsfield is the Ashwiltokook Rail Trail. Of course, that was in the early 2000s, late 1990s. The first stretch was built from the Mall Road in Lanesboro, northerly up to Adams. So we were working for many years to try to get the designs done to bring that bike trail from the Mall Road into Pittsfield. And there have been two projects, and we've been able to extend the trail southerly all the way down to Merrill Road. So, you know, that is just an amazing resource for folks in our community. I knew that it probably is the most popular recreational resource that we have in the city. And that was a real strong partnership between the Commonwealth and the city. The city paid for the design. The Commonwealth paid to construct it. We maintain it. The Parks Department maintains it. And, you know, there is such great use of that rail trail. And it's really an amazing resource.
Yeah.
And we're planning to bring that trail further into the city, and ultimately it's a Berkshire bike path. The idea is to connect it into Lenox and all the way down through South County and ultimately into Connecticut.
Yeah. Now, there was, if you go into the Wayback Machine with me, in 2005, there was a group of architects that came in to do a planning charrette with the city. I don't know if you remember that, to try to create sort of this green necklace throughout the city to connect all of it by rail trail and to connect the green ways. Is that still an operative plan or something that folks refer to, or have we moved in a different direction?
Do you remember the one I'm talking about? I do. I think what you're referring to is the Urban River Visions Plan.
AIA came in to do...
AIA, American Institute of Architects.
Came in and did a multi-day charrette to talk about, you know, what could we do?
Yeah. We've really been focusing on the greenway planning along the west branch of the Housatonic River.
Okay.
That was an element of that plan. We knew that the bike path planning was happening over in the eastern part of the city relative to the Ashwiltokook extensions. And a lot of our focus has been in the west side along the west branch of the Housatonic River with the West Side Riverway Plan. So there's a new park along Dewey Avenue that came out of that plan. There have been improvements at all the parks along there at Dorothy Amos Park and Durant Park and Kerry Bach Park. So there's a lot of focus toward not only how we get folks to... You know, for a long time, the neighborhood turned its back to the river, and the whole idea through this West Side Riverway plan is how do we bring folks back to the river and actually have them understand that this is has always been and should be viewed as a critical resource for our community.
Yeah. One of the most wonderful things about living in the Berkshires is everywhere you look, you see a mountain range. You know where you are. There's an incredible sense of place.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of, you know, two people means nine opinions on the bike trails through the center of town.
Yeah.
So do you ever have a fantasy that traffic maybe through the center of town could be turned into, you know, prohibited and turned into some pedestrian something, or is that really not on anybody's horizon?
No, that's absolutely, I think, this administration and our Commissioner of Public Services, Ricardo Morales, you know, everything that they're trying to do revolves around one simple thought, and that is, how do we slow the traffic down? We understand that our city was built around the automobile, as with much of New England and America. We get that, but there are so many folks that aren't drivers, that are walkers and bikers. How do we accommodate them in a safe way, understanding that the vehicle will continue to be the dominant mode of transportation? But it's all about slowing the vehicles down, slowing the speeds down, and making certain that there are infrastructure improvements that acknowledge that it's a safe place to walk and a safe place to bike. So everything we're doing from an engineering standpoint relative to roadway redesign and reconstruction has a nod toward pedestrian safety for these other modes of transportation. So all I would say to that, my message, and I preach this everywhere I go, slow down your speeds.
Yeah. Is there a particular city that you look to for a downtown that's similar in size to us that's looked at that reconfiguring their downtown, whether they made it a pedestrian mall or some other way that you go, you know, that could work here?
You know, I certainly look to Northampton as a, you know, when I look at the downtown area of Northampton, that is such an, you know, a vibrant economic driver for the city of Northampton. You know, they've got a different population. They've got a ton of students and a sort of a lot more draw in Northampton. So it's a different community. But I think there are elements of Northampton that I really particularly appreciate. There are really cool pedestrian only spaces, kind of small nooks in the downtown, yeah, which there's a lot of artwork in their downtown, and bike lanes. I also looked at Burlington, Vermont, and Church Street up in Burlington. They turned over a whole roadway to pedestrian only, and I think it's really working up there. You know, everywhere you go, you know, Saratoga Springs, another community which I think has made real inroads with in their downtown. So, you know, I'm a big fan of spaces and architecture and how we all exist in a space, and how, at the end of the day, how it can be a safe place where you feel really good about being there. You know, what is the essence of the space? How does it make you feel? And at the end of the day, how does it work for the community? So, you know, working out of the Office of Community Development, though I'm not particularly right in the middle of zoning and all these other community development expertise areas, I sort of lend my thoughts and impressions from the parks side.
Sure.
Because a lot of what we do is, as park planners, is create spaces that people feel good in. And the same holds true for sort of hardscape downtown areas. You know,
sure.
Same kind of planning philosophy.
Yeah. And you must have an oar in the water, though, in terms of the historic preservation resources, because we're very lucky in the downtown in that we have some, looks to me to be significant buildings. And I know when the Beacon was developed, there was a lot of historic preservation money that came from the feds because we looked to that as a resource.
Mm-hmm.
How do you interact with that?
Yeah, so there's a number of really important historical resources in some of our park areas. Of course, Park Square right downtown is the center and literal heartbeat of our community. You know, part of what I do is make certain that Park Square always looks good, and we have done a whole tree replanting program there. And of course, we've got a new permanent Christmas tree that we that we sighted on Park Square. A lot of folks had a lot of opinions about that. But, you know, on the western edge of the park is a very important monument to the Civil War. And, you know, one of my projects in the past was to have that completely restored and make certain that that was a bronze sculpture that could last for another generation.
Sure.
I'm also very involved in Springside House up at Springside Park. That's the oldest city building. It was built in the mid-1800s and is just a really critical sort of keystone resource at Springside Park. The house has a lot of challenges. It hasn't been occupied for a number of years. There are structural issues with the building, and but we're slowly picking away at those and trying to identify how to get that those repairs done so that we can open this building back up to the community and have community meetings.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's sort of best and highest use, as they say, in what you do for that building? What could it be?
The best and highest use is a mix between some kind of revenue-generating component and public use. And so revenue-generating component, we're not envisioning that, you know, an insurance company moves up there or something like that.
The tea house at Springside.
our vision is maybe a land trust or some kind of nonprofit that has alignment with what we do in the Parks Department and our values around open space. But we also so there's a revenue generating component.
Sure.
There's enough space up there where we could site some offices, and I think there'd be some very desirable office space we could present to the community for a rental opportunity. Also making certain that the space is open for many groups that have a need for a meeting space or. That there's a long history of the Springside House providing free meeting space for organizations.
Yeah.
We'd really like to turn that model back toward reality.
Yeah, and if you've never seen it, go. It's got great bones.
It really does.
If people have opinions and there are more ideas, the more good ideas you can get, how can people constructively contribute ideas that they might have had about these projects? What do they look for? I know there's hearings, there's meetings, there's where do people go and what do they look for and what's the best way to prepare to show up at one of these and
so we try
some constructive
we try to use our social media and press releases out of the mayor's office to advertise if there are meetings or opportunities for input on any host of projects that we're involved with. We certainly hope the community comes out and shares with us their thoughts and ideas at those meetings. But I'm perfectly accessible, always willing to pick up the phone. I am kind of a park geek. I will talk to anyone at any time, whether I'm in the aisle at Big Y. Sometimes my wife will look at me cross-eyed on a Saturday morning when I'm chatting about Wacona Park and the latest what's going on there. But again, I want to make certain that folks hear it from me and hear directly the facts about whatever particular project they might be interested in. You know, there's often a lot of rumors and innuendo and other misinformation that's out there. So you can always pick up the phone, email me,
Talk process for a minute.
Sure.
So you hear all this stuff and you're in hearing, you've got people's feedback, you've got calls that you take. What happens to all of that?
Yeah.
And how does it get looked at? And how do the wheels chew on that to come up with some potential decisions and solutions?
So a lot of the decisions that are made in our park system aren't mine alone. I'm staff to the Park Commission. So the Park Commission oversees all of our park lands. All of the conservation properties are overseen by the Conservation Commission. So those are two regulatory boards that that I report to. So ultimately, decisions in our parks are made by the Park Commission. So they meet once a month, and folks can always show up at those meetings. There's always a public speaking component at those meetings. And of course, anytime you reach out to me with a communication, if it needs Park Commission approval, we'll put it on the agenda, we'll talk about it, and they'll render a decision or advise on how they want to see a particular project go. But generally, I have a lot of latitude sort of in between park meetings to make decisions on day-to-day maintenance issues. And, that really is important because in the moment, like where we are right now in June, in the summer of 2025, things are moving fast. People want to know what's happening. People have an issue with this or that. We need to be able to react quickly to those.
Yeah. And just very quickly, are plain old folks are on that commission that get appointed, or are those elected positions?
Those are appointed positions by the mayor. If someone has an interest in Park Commission or Conservation Commission or any city board, I encourage you to reach out to the mayor's office and let them know what your interest is.
Hold that thought, because we will be right back with more of Morning Drive on Pittsfield Community Radio.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Okay.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union. Proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, UCPWMA.org/jobs.
Still paying for that monthly gym membership? How about that streaming service you never watch? Why not support WTBR-FM instead? For just $8.97 a month, you can show your support for our community radio station today. Go to WTBRFM.com and click donate. It's as easy as that. We need to support the station to keep it on the air. And every little bit helps. WTBR-FM, for the love of radio.
Mm-hmm. El condado de los Berkshires se dirige hacia un mañana más brillante y ese futuro comienza contigo.
No,
los Berkshires están al borde de caer en una gran crisis de salud mental debido a la falta de acceso, dejando algunos pacientes, especialmente niños, esperando meses para recibir la atención adecuada. Tú puedes ayudar abogando por ti mismo y por otros para encontrar carreras en la salud mental. Sé un héroe de la salud mental para los Berkshires. Para obtener más información, visita briancenter.org o namibc.org.
Welcome to the M&M Show. I'm Michelle.
And I'm Mike.
Listen to us every Tuesday from 10 to 12 for eclectic variety of 70s to today of every genre on WTBR 89.7 Pittsfield Community Radio.
Radio like it used to be.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sundrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
And good morning to you. Thanks for being with us this morning. I'm back with my guest, Jim McGrath. He's the Park, Open Space, and Natural Resources Program Manager for the City of Pittsfield. And we're all thinking about kind of getting out and about after a very long winter. So we're
Wasn't it long and cold?
You know, I mean, there were things to do outside, right? Because you have that stuff. We're not going to talk about ice fishing or ice skating any of that now.
We're talking about the heat.
But that's your thing as well. Let's turn our attention to skate parks. I have such admiration for people who know how to do that stuff. Can you tell me where they are, what's doing, and any other things about skate parks in the city?
Yeah, so we have one skate park, and it's over located on about the corner of Appleton Ave and East Street. That was a project that we designed and built back in, maybe 2012. It was the first phase, and then a couple years later, we built out the rest of the park. Previously, it was at the Common, and it was a really bad location for a skate park. It was sort of tucked in the back. All kinds of crazy things were happening back there. You couldn't see. So when we gave the Common the big facelift, we moved the skate park over to what were derelict tennis courts across the street from Pittsfield High. You know, we started designing the skate park, and we said, we can't do this alone. So we reached out to the Bill at the Garden, the skate shop on North Street, and he said, I'm going to rally the guys and girls who are skaters in this community and bikers as well. And we worked really closely with them to design this skate park because we knew if we designed it in a vacuum, it wouldn't be used. So it has all these elements these are athletes, and it really needs to be acknowledged that what you see happening at the skate park is no less insignificant or any different than what you see on a baseball field. These are athletes. They are good at what they do, and they're constantly looking to get better. So You know, the skate park is a great place for that to happen. And, you know, there are elements of the skate park that this community wanted to see. They wanted it to be front and center. So there it is on East Street.
Right.
You know, it's it doesn't require a lot of maintenance simply because it's all concrete. One of the things that we're challenged with is that it keeps getting tagged. So we've essentially thrown our hands up and said, you know what? We're just going to let this get tagged. This is what it's going to look. You know, we've spent a lot of time and money over the years removing graffiti only for it to show back up. So, you know, sometimes I drive by and I cringe a little bit, but
as long as it's clean. I mean, isn't it kind of like a community mural in a way, as long as folks keep it clean?
It's a space that these and I won't really say young people, because I often see folks 30-somethings, 40-somethings in there skating. I see families in there on Saturdays. You know, it is a place where athleticism can flourish and where artistic expression can happen. You know, I'd really love to build another skate park in another part of town.
Yeah.
And maybe that's on the horizon. But, you know, right now, I think what we have on East Street is serving our community well.
Yeah. So if I've never done it before and I want to go, is there a place for me there?
Certainly. Of course there is. I would probably say you should probably have some instruction, because there's sort of an etiquette on how to use the skate park. There are some elements that are trickier and a little bit more dangerous than others. You know, and unfortunately, we don't have the garden on North Street anymore. Bill has closed up shop and sort of moved on to the next part of his journey in his life. And so unfortunately, we don't have that sort of gathering space, you know, and of course, the garden was the place that would help put on events at the park. They would have learned to skate programs and learned to BMX programs. And so there's I really feel sad that that's not there on North Street anymore. So there's a real void. But, you know, I certainly hope that someone picks up that opportunity, because I think that's a hole that needs to be filled.
Sure. You talked about the Common before, and I know from my living in Pittsfield, you know, over certain decades, that I've really seen that become a center for activity as it never was before. A part of it, Roots Rising being there with the market and other kinds of things. How does that feel? That must feel pretty good to you.
Yeah, you know, the Common is everything that we had imagined it to be. When I first started with the city 25 years ago, the Common was this this sort of beat down, grassy field that
no person's land.
Yeah, and it didn't have any character. It was, you know, it had a really sort of derelict, broken down playground, and of course the skate park in the back where all kinds of mischievous things would happen at night. So we had the opportunity to over the course of 5 years, to redesign and construct what you see now at the Common. We have a splash pad. We have fixed restrooms. We've got a great playground. Of course, the performance pavilion and a lot of open space for events. And we see more events at the Common than we do at any other park across the city. And we designed it in such a way that it can withstand all of this pressure.
Yeah.
So we're just very fortunate that you know, we have the farmers market there, that folks are using the Common in the ways we want to see it be used. It's it really does feel good to have that really handsome gathering space in our community.
And it's walkable to downtown, which begins to make that a little more vibrant, too.
Absolutely.
We were talking about athletes just a second ago, and you were telling me that there's some work going at the Taconic High School track.
Yeah, so the Taconic High School track was built about 35 years ago and was really suffering from deferred maintenance, and particularly the rubber surface was eroding, was peeling away from the underlying asphalt, and it became unsafe for athletes. And in fact, a couple of years ago, the athletic department at Pittsfield Public Schools said, we're not using this track for track meets anymore. We'll practice on it, but we cannot invite other schools to this facility. So I, working with some of the city councilors and the athletic director, we put together a project to redesign the track and make some other substantial improvements. We were able to get funding through the city council, through the capital budget, and we hired a company out of Springfield that is known for their track construction. And we're coming into the, you know, just another couple of weeks, the track will be fully ready. It'll have a lot of different elements. And the way it's arranged, I think, is a lot more appropriate for what we want to see in a track facility.
And what is that?
So we have an 8-lane straightaway on one side, which is something that modern tracks all have. Previously, the track was 6 lanes all around, so we have an 8-lane on one side. And because of the when track starts in the springtime, and you have 6 or 7 schools at a track meet, often you're running up against darkness and trying to get all these athletes through through the long jump. And if you only have one long jump pit, so what we've done here is we have 2 long jump pits side by side. We've got 2 shot put areas right next to each other. We've got the 8-lane straightaway, which opens up things. We've got a much more safe high jump area. So we've looked at all of the elements and tried to create a facility that can be used by all of the schools. And, we can be very efficient with their time, get them in, get the track meet finished, and get them home because that's important.
What kind of surface is there on the track?
So the track is it's underlaid with asphalt, and the track surface itself is actually it's kind of a rubber. It goes on hot. You sort of trowel it on. It's heated rubber, and then it hardens up. It needs to harden up for a couple weeks. Then we can put all those lines on it for all the various running events.
Yeah, and will that track be open to the general public at times it's not being used by the school?
That's one of the great things about the Taconic High School track. It is a safe space for walkers. For in our community. And we have a couple of those. We have the Clapp Park track, we have the track at Bellinger Field, and the Taconic track. We hear this often, that folks in our community are looking for safe places to walk. So when we redesigned the track at Taconic High School, we did it with an understanding that this would be open to the community, and it's not just a place for Taconic High School athletes. So
there's other runners who are not in school that can use the track too.
Typically the exception is made at Taconic High School. Typically, we don't want to see the public on school grounds during the school day. That's just a safety issue.
That's understandable.
But Taconic High School, the track is disconnected somewhat from the school. It's isolated. It's fenced. So we allow folks from the community to use the track to run, walk, do anything that is appropriate up there. It's as much a community resource as it is a school resource.
Yeah. And what are some other great places to run if you're a runner in the city and not in school, especially now that the weather's getting nice? What would you suggest to people coming from out of town, perhaps, who are only here for the summer, like really like to get into running? Where should they go if they don't want to do a track?
Yeah, so I would say the Ashwiltikook Rail Trail has always been a great place. I see runners up there all the time. I know we're talking about Pittsfield and sort of this show's Pittsfield focus,
okay.
But I will say Kennedy Park down in Lenox is one of the great places to bird watch, to walk your dog, to run, to mountain bike. So, that's a resource that is right down the road.
Yeah.
I will also say if folks want to get into running or learn about great places to run, I would encourage them to get a hold of Siobhan Lemmy over at the Berkshire Running Center. Those folks are all about health and running and introducing folks into the sport, whether you're a beginner or whether you're an expert. Berkshire Running Center is where you should be connected to.
And I was surprised to see how many races there are through the city. I know the July 4th, the 5K is coming up, and there's some others coming up. Where do you find out about if you want to do some competitive running
Berkshire
through the city?
Berkshire Running Center is the hub for all things running, whether it's fun runs or competitive runs. Berkshire Running Center really is our strong partner.
Oh, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about Four-Footed Friends. Are there dog parks? Talk about dogs in the city and great places to go with your dog.
Yeah, so dogs are always welcome in all of our park areas. Of course, our park rules are not unlike park rules in many, many communities. You have to leash your dog. You got to pick up after your dog. Those are the basics. But dogs are always welcome in our parks. We constructed a dog park up at Burbank Park a couple years ago with some funding we received from the Stanton Foundation. So we were able to design a woodland dog park. If you've never been to our dog park at Burbank, you know, most dog parks, they sort of plop them down in a field and then they're bringing in shade structures and planting trees.
Sure.
We did the reverse. We found a wooded area and we cleared out all of the undesirable trees. We left the best, tallest, most shady ones, and we built the dog park in the understory. So our dog park is a real natural dog park. You will find ferns and other you know, low-growing plants in our dog park area. But it's entirely fenced. It's really safe. There's a large dog side and a small dog side. We have water fountains for the dogs in each of those areas. The double enclosure when you bring your dog in to sort of orient your dog. So it's all has all the modern features of a modern dog park, and it is really well used. And we've got a great group of volunteers that helps us maintain portions of the dog park. You know, policing the area for dog droppings and taking care of some of that small minor maintenance stuff.
Sure.
It's super helpful. The dog park committee's just been great.
Yeah. So school's out for the summer, and people are going to be heading to the playgrounds, especially little ones.
Yeah.
And I'm so surprised to see the popularity of splash pads. That was not a thing in my day. It was a pool or a lake.
Yeah.
But now it's a splash pad. How are the playgrounds seem pretty well used in the city and with lots of activities too.
Yeah, so we have playgrounds scattered across the entirety of the city, and you can really sort of walk to a within walking distance, you can get to a playground wherever you live in this city. All of the elementary schools have playgrounds, and those are all overseen by my department. But many, many of the parks have playground structures as well. Splash pads are located at Clapp Park and at the Common. You know, that is sort of the trend in the park systems across the country. You know, no one is building pools anymore. Pools are just inherently dangerous. And if you can even have an insurance carrier that will provide coverage for it. So pools are difficult.
And staffing, too. There's all kinds of stuff with staffing that you have to do that's really kind of tough, which I certainly appreciate.
Yeah, exactly. So so the splash pads, we can open them up. We don't need lifeguards there. And they offer opportunity to cool down in the hot part of the day. So we have splash pads that are open from 8 to 8 at the Common and at Clapp Park. And we're actually in the middle of designing a new splash pad at Durant Park, which is down on John Street in the West Side. So that'll be exciting.
And when is that expected to be?
Probably in 2026. We've got some grant funding that we've applied for.
Yeah.
The design is completely done, and all the permitting and design work and cost estimates are in. We've applied for some funding. If we get the funding, we'll be in construction in fall of 2026.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit as a parent or a caregiver about safety at playgrounds. Are there facilities where, is there an age that you think of that it's okay to say, you know, in my day, we went outside in the summer and we didn't come back till the streetlights went on. It's a different day now. What should caregivers, older people who are taking care of little ones, think about, and what are safety things, and are there patrols? How does that all work?
Yeah, so one of the things that's important for everyone to understand is that our park staff do an amazing job keeping our parks and playgrounds free of litter and other maybe dangerous, you know, broken glass and things. But we can't be at all of these parks all the time. So when you're at a playground, you know, it's probably incumbent on the caregiver just to make certain that the situation is safe. And if you see anything there that needs immediate attention, I would ask that you call City Hall, call the Parks Department, let us know about it. If there's a broken piece of equipment, we want to know about that right away. But generally, all of our park equipment is in good working order. We spend a lot of time on that. All the playground surfacing is appropriate at the right depth. So we really pride ourselves because we know how important playground areas are, and that they can often be places where people get hurt. So we're trying to minimize that. But also, there are playground structures that that aren't appropriate for a two-year-old. You know, you really need to understand there's sort of the 2 to 5-year-old age class, and then there's the 5 to 12-year-old. Those are the two types of playgrounds. At most of our parks, we have a separation between the equipment. So age appropriateness is important to be mindful of when you're a caregiver.
But the bottom line is bring an adult with your kids.
Yeah, we want to. Yeah, you know, being there with your children is important. You know, it's I think the day and age of letting your kid run out the door to the playground. You know, we all need to be a little leery of that. Not saying that incidents happen in our parks, but it's a different world that we live in. And, yeah. You know, I've always said if you're going to be a parent, you have to be all in. You got to be with your children. You got to know what's happening, what's going on in the area. That's just me. But
yeah, no, that's a valid point of view. And, you know, this one's a big one. let's talk a little bit about Wacona Park.
Yeah.
I love baseball. I mean, I'm unabashedly love baseball and have been to Wacona Park a lot of times.
Yeah.
I always love when I see a baseball park in the middle of a city. I think that's a wonderful thing to have it there. What's kind of visioning is happening, you know, forget constraints for a minute.
Yeah.
This is just you.
Yeah.
Forget money constraints, forget zoning constraints, yep. Forget everything. What sort of goal and purpose when all this is said and done and we've figured it out, would you like to see a new Wacona Park accomplish?
So a new Wacona Park in my vision, but this is also a vision that's shared by the administration and others in our community. Wacona Park is a place that has so much history behind it. So we need a Wacona Park that celebrates our deep history with baseball here in the city. Of course, the baseball bylaw from 1791, we own that, the first reference to the word baseball right here in a city ordinance. We really need to celebrate that in a major way. And we need to create a facility that is, one that can sustain community gathering in a really safe and modern and accessible way. You know, the current Wacona Park grandstand that's there on Wacona Street now is really inaccessible. If you have mobility challenges, there are portions of that facility that you cannot get to and really limit when we say, everyone plays or everyone has access in our parks. Oftentimes that's not true. And we look at Wacona Park, that's not true. So a new facility is fully accessible. It has some of those modern conveniences, which I think fans expect and which we want to deliver. And also that has, you know, again, a lot of these elements that I think when people think about Wacona Park are celebrated, like the owls that hang from the ceiling. You know, whatever we do, whatever the iteration of a Wacona Park comes, whatever ends up on 105 Wacona Street, those are things that we want to make certain are part of the site. But most importantly, at the end of the day, Wacona Park is more of a feeling than anything. You know, Wacona Park is our memories of being with your family on a warm summer night, having some, you know, Cracker Jacks and popcorn and a couple beers and watching baseball, whether it's great baseball or whether it's, you know, a mediocre team. When you leave there, it's that feeling that you get and that sort of warmth around being with your friends and your family and watching America's pastime.
Yeah. I'm not going to ask you if you're going to change the place the sun goes down at night, but I will ask you, I'm sure there are fears in a community at any time there's change.
Yeah.
There's fear about change. What are sort of the top five hits that you hear, and how is the group who's developing this looking to address those? And maybe some of them are unfounded.
Yeah, so one of them is relative to flooding. You know, this Wacona Park sits on the bank of the west branch of the Housatonic River. It has flooded for years and years. It's sort of part of the lore of the ballpark, but we made some improvements back in 2007, which, it didn't solve the flooding. But when the flooding happens and the water recedes, you can really use the parking lot. So we want to make certain that folks understand we're probably never going to solve the flooding issue. We can minimize it, but there will be times when the parking lot will be overtopped. This design, whatever it is we do, we need to recognize that it will flood, but when the flood water recedes, we need to be able to use the site right away. The second thing is the sun delay. There's no chance that we're going to reorient the field to eliminate the sun delay. It's just we're tucked in an area between homes and businesses on Wakona Street and the river. There's really no way we can sort of turn this facility to eliminate the sun delay. What we're trying to do with the redesign is to minimize the sun delay. Because, you know, even though some fans may love sun delay, I'll tell you right now, the players don't like it, and the umpires especially don't like it. It really just pauses the game and sort of brings everything down, and sort of, you know, all of that excitement around the game sort of wanes, and that's not, often the coaches don't like that as far as the competitiveness. So,
yeah, everybody's all warmed up, and then they gotta sit down for a while.
Exactly.
So we shouldn't look for a reorientation. We should look for something that's going to occupy the same footprint.
Exactly, the same footprint. The field will be in essentially the same orientation that it is now. But that's, you know, what makes it kind of a quirky facility. There are only a couple professional ballparks across the country that sort of face westerly, that have the batter facing westerly. It's sort of something we own, and again, we're going to try to celebrate that, but minimize the impact that the athletes feel.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of Fenway in a little way. It's got its quirky, weird things, and they just are, and that's what makes it charming. Any other fears that folks have, or sort of unfounded things that people think are going to happen that you'd like to address?
Yeah, you know, the Wakona Park is on the National Register of Historic Places, and you know, people look at the current grandstand and say, oh, it's historic. It's not really historic. That grandstand was built in 1953.
More hysteric than historic.
Yeah. You know, but the site is historic. The site has, we've been playing baseball down there since the mid-1800s when George Burbank sited the first baseball field down on Wakona Street at that facility. And there's a lot of folks that particularly are interested in what we're going to do with the playing surface. Right now it's natural grass, but in the Berkshires, it's difficult to start spring baseball on natural grass, particularly when we have a lot of rain. There are often rainouts at Wakona Park, scheduling changes. So one of the things we're looking at is it advantageous to put a artificial turf field at Wakona Park? If there's an artificial turf field, we can play baseball. We could play 15 games a day, 7 days a week. Weather would not impact our ability to play. There'd be a different level of maintenance that we would have to consider, and maybe some new equipment.
Yeah.
And the cost to develop an artificial turf field are pretty high. But once it's installed, I think it would serve us well. But there's a lot of folks the city has not landed on a decision one way or another. Do we keep the grass or do we keep the turf? Right now, we're keeping the turf. And really focusing on what a grandstand might look like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jim, I thank you so much for being with me today. I guess your main message is get outside and do something, eh?
Get outside and enjoy the parks.
That's great. Thank you so much, Jim McGrath, Park and Open Space Natural Resources Program Manager for the City of Pittsfield. We hope you have a wonderful summer, and thank you so much for spending the morning with me. I'm Ellen Speer. You're listening to Morning Drive on Pittsfield Community Radio.